Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you this morning to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, this 26th day of October 2005. So glad once again that you've joined us. Lots of things going on in the news today, not the least of which is number 2,000 was killed yesterday in Iraq. That's the official number, at any rate, from the United States government. But at any rate, let's go have a look at the weather before we go on.
Right now in Google Spartanburg, it's 46 degrees, downtown 41 degrees, Anderson 35 degrees. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 60s, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And today, there's a frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 6 a.m., Thursday, just to let you know. Here's a quote by an anonymous author. Only a government that is afraid of its citizens tries to control them.
Okay, and some people have been sending around on the internet lately in little groups that I'm on list for, at any rate. Allah finds piggy bank threatening. That's right. Allah has now found that piggy banks are threatening. Alleged Lord of the Worlds hates porcelain or porcine porcelain. How stupid does multiculturalism have to get? British banks are banning piggy banks because they may offend some Muslims. Halifax and NatWest banks have led the move to scrap the time-honored symbol of saving from being even given to children or used in their advertising. The Daily Express Star Group reports here, Muslims do not eat pork, as Islamic culture deems the pig to be an impure animal. Salim Mullah, secretary of the Lancashire Council of Mosques, backed the bank move. This is a sensitive issue, and I think that banks are simply being courteous to their customers, he said. However, the move brought accusations for a political correctness gone mad from critics. The next thing, we will be banning Christmas trees and cribs from the logical result that proceeds at a bland uniformity. The dean of Blackburn, Reverend Christian Armstrong, said. Yes, this is insanity, idiocy, and you know, people are just so stupid nowadays, folks. This is really silly. Banning piggy banks? Give me a break. Multiculturalism is a dangerous threat to everybody. It's not helpful. Okay, senators are pushing plan, the power to destroy, according to WorldNet Daily. They're pushing a plan to end the income tax. Lawmakers looking to replace the current code with a flat levy on business transactions. It's led by none other than Senator Jim DeMint, Republican from South Carolina. South Carolina, dissatisfied the results of a Bush advisory panel's recommendations on tax reform, is set to introduce a bill to abolish federal income tax in the favor of a levy on business transactions. That sounds to me like a value-added tax. Jim DeMint told the New York Sun he would put his plan before the Senate tomorrow. The proposal calls for an end to all personal income taxes, the attendant BVA-related taxes, deductions and exemptions, including the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax. The plan would eliminate the need for Americans to file income tax returns. The president's panel, led by former Senators Connie Mack and John Brooks, issued two proposals to reform parts of the tax code, but didn't go far enough for many tax reform activists. Okay, we'll see what that's going to come down to. If you want to talk about that, give us a call here at the show, 864-244-9904. That's 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. And here's a story from the research staff coming up, Salivate Citizen by Mike in Tokyo Rogers. That's Mike Rogers in Tokyo, I guess. Salivate Citizen. The enemy is anybody who's going to get you killed, no matter which side he's on, Joseph Heller said in Catch-22. Hate to break this to you, but you are brainwashed, or at the very best have been subjected to brainwashing all your life. It's unfortunate. You can deny it all you want, but you have your parents, your grandparents, and their parents before that. So have your wife and your children. So have your children's children and their children's too. Your entire family and everyone you know have been subjected to brainwashing, and some have been consumed by it, and some will never get over it. It is most unfortunate that it is not anything you can say or do that will change, make things any different. The people who will get the most angry and defensive about this, the people who will argue with this the most incessantly, are the most brainwashed of all. Well, okay, what's all that about? From the day a child gets old enough to understand, the brainwashing commences. Believe it or not, I'd even have to say that brainwashing begins the day a baby can recognize colors and objects. From the day a baby can start to understand the relationship between signs, gestures, and their meanings is the day brainwashing begins. And it doesn't matter whether or not that child was born and raised in the Soviet Union, China, Japan, Nazi Germany, or the United States. If the home in the area they are raised is any part of government or even one iota of jingoism or patriotism, you can bet the child will grow up with a biased view of the world. You can be sure that the brainwashing has distorted that child's thinking. You can also be sure that the child will probably grow up with an unwavering belief that this country is best and will get angry or defensive if challenged about it. You can bet the child will grow up being considered a dumb bird and ill-educated by the very few who aren't brainwashed. And you can bet your bottom dollar that a child will grow up being a believer that his country could do no wrong, no matter what the circumstances or the facts say. It is unfortunate that many Americans, for the most part, will get all riled up and huffy about what I've written here, but from what I have to say, Americans are probably the most brainwashed basket cases in the world today. It is really a shame that the people who believe that they are the number one in the world's only superpower, in fact, probably the most brainwashed people on the face of the earth today. Few people realize that I have written here as fact, will not dispute for a moment. They are the ones who have seen the enemy. The really smart ones or the lucky few will try to save themselves or their kids by getting education outside their country. If they do this, they have a fighting chance to save themselves. They'll also most likely have to learn and deeply understand a foreign language and culture before they can recognize the brainwashing. The wisest among us become wise due to years of consideration, contemplation, experience. Those are the people who will see immediately what has been written here is plain as day. I've met and corresponded with people whom I reckon will never figure it out. They are regrettably the dumbest birds of them all. This is a book, apparently, that Walt Kelly had written called Walt Pogo, We Have Met the Enemy and He Is Us. Ooh. Oh, my. The only one to argue with a fool is a bigger fool, said Confucius, 551 B.C. to 440 to 479 B.C. Luckily for me, I figured his brainwashing business out by accident on January 29th. Of 1986 at about 7 a.m. in Japan time, and I meant it that literally. It was like a light going on in my head. You may think I jest, but I do not. It took two tragic accidents happening to me to see what years of American public school indoctrination as well as years of American TV had done to me, and whether or not you realize this brainwashing is happening to you and your children right now. Here's how I found out about it. On December 8th, 1985, I'd been living in Japan for more than a year. I was a typical proud American, like any recent expat, I thought. The United States is not perfect, but it's the best the world has to offer. This kind of idea seems pretty typical for many Americans, especially those who have never been overseas or learned a different language or culture. A bit ridiculous when you stop to think about it. I had finished work and come home early, about 8:30 p.m., and found my daughter sleeping and my wife uncontrollably sobbing in front of the TV set. She was very upset. I was afraid that someone had died in the family that day. When I asked her what was wrong, she told me about Japan Airlines 747 jet crash in Guma Prefecture in Japan that had killed about 540 people earlier that day. It was the worst aviation accident in history, and my wife was crushed. I came and hugged her and was wiping her tears. I told her everything would be all right. At that time, I still thought that someone from her immediate family must have been on the airplane for her to be so upset, but there weren't any family members on the plane, just some Japanese people, I thought. Japanese people who I didn't know, and I didn't know them. They were not my people. I didn't care. I couldn't care why my wife was so broken up about this accident. Air crashes happen all the time. Who cares, I thought, said to my wife. It'll be all right, honey. You'll see. Oh, how cold, callous, and stupid I was. What a pitiful, brainwashed American fool. The worst sin toward our fellow creatures is not to hate them, but to be indifferent toward them. That's the essence of inhumanity. George Bernard Shaw, 1856 to 1950, writing in The Devil's Disciple, 1901, Act 2. Then, not 7 short weeks later, I was up early in the morning and showering and shaving to get ready to go to my office job. Since those were the days before the internet, I used to always turn on the TV with the volume off so as not to wake my wife and baby daughter. And when I was watching the news in the morning, I brushed my teeth, poking my head around the wall to watch the day's news. I saw the news reports about the United States sending up a rocket. No big deal. When are they going to get to the sports? I thought, continued brushing. When I stuck my head around the corner expecting to see something else, they were still on the rocket launch. This went on quite well, that's odd. Then I put my glasses and saw something strange. It's supposed to look like that, I wondered. The rocket exploded in air and pieces flew off in different directions. Then it dawned on me that I was watching the news of a shuttle accident. I stopped what I was doing and got close to the TV and turned up the volume so I could hear. It was an accident. The Space Shuttle Challenger had exploded. On takeoff, it was January 28, 1986 in the United States, but in Japan, it was already the 29th. The rocket blew into pieces. I had a lump in my throat. I realized the full implications of what I was seeing on TV. I began to cry. My wife heard I was crying. She ran to me and hugged me in her nightgown. She wiped back my tears and asked what I was wrong. I told her about the shuttle accident. She held my head and ran hers through her hair. She said, "It'll be all right, honey. You'll see." Later, as I slowly walked down to the train station, the weight of the world seemingly on my shoulders, I was the only American around, it came to me. Why did I not cry when 540 humans died in an airplane crash, yet with 7 others get killed, it broke my heart into tears? Why did my wife cry for the 540 and not be so upset about the 7? Was she kinder to human suffering than I was? Perhaps it was the case. Yes, but the actual truth of the matter was that she was raised in Japan, I was raised in the United States. I was indoctrinated by U.S. government propaganda that taught me to believe that American lives are important or valuable while the lives of other people than the lives of other people from other countries. Why do Americans care when their two of their soldiers are killed in a foreign country, in a foreign country, but when tens of thousands of innocents in their own homes, in their own country, are bombed and murdered by us? It's not even reported in the American news. Why do the brainwashed cry when one or two soldiers are killed fighting in a country that they had no business being in the first place, but don't care for the innocent children murdered by those soldiers at the same time? Why do people care about someone whose only relationship to them actually is government-issued passport? Why don't people still shed a tear for the 10,000 dead in an earthquake in a foreign land? Could it really be because of a passport? Is it really just because of brainwashing and indoctrination we have all received since the day we were born? What a pitifully painful and disgusting excuse for a human being I was. I had allowed myself to be brainwashed, and it took me 27 years to fully realize it. But now I know, and I will remain vigilant, that it never happens to me again. Sadly, these days, I meet or talk to very few of my American brothers and sisters who seem to have come to realize the extent of this brainwashing that they have been subjected to. Even worse, I meet or talk to even fewer who seem like they are likely ever to have the smarts to understand. And this is truly one of the biggest shames of the 21st century. The country that should be number one in the world is only number one in the fact that their people are the most brainwashed of all. The American people need to find the truth and stop this decline of our country, said Nancy Mullendore, October 24, 2005. Mike Antokio Rogers was born and raised in the USA and moved to Japan in 1984. He has the distinction of being fired from every FM radio station in Tokyo, one of them three times. His first book, Schizophrenic in Japan, is now on sale. Well, isn't that an interesting story? I'm glad we were able to read that entire thing here to make us think. Of course, we lived outside of the country for 5 years ourselves, lived in Chile, and got a totally different perspective of the world. And he's right about that. And it is so sad. And you see that indoctrination so clearly when you have been brainwashed into thinking this is my country. Just look at the way that people treat the Olympics. You know, my country. Folks, if you want to have a Christian worldview, you need to abandon that whole indoctrination from the media, from the public school, wherever. Your primary allegiance, Christian, is to Jesus Christ and to his people, the church. That is it. It's not to anyone who has any kind of link through the same political boundaries that you do, to a passport or anything else. If you're thinking otherwise, you're sinning. You're doing something wrong. Your primary allegiance and your primary nationality is a heavenly kingdom, and it's to Jesus and his people. That's it. And beyond that, if you have any allegiance at all to distant second or third place, if you will, that distant third place is to be those who oppose tyranny and who love liberty, wherever they may be, whether they be in Chile, Japan, the United States, or anywhere else in the world. So let's try to get our bearings straight here, folks, and what the Christian worldview requires of us, not get it twisted by our public school or pagan seminary indoctrination. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
Comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg, and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
Back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. You know, I was just thinking about that last piece again, and it is really important that Christians grasp how bad the indoctrination has been in this country, or any country for that matter, but especially here in America, to believe in the nationalist principles that are thrust upon them by the public school and by the media for that matter. You know, if you really want to be a biblical Christian, you need to take a step back and look at the big picture. This also occurred to me when I was in the Czech Republic some time ago. Might have been, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, visiting the Baptist seminary there, talking about Bible and government, and one of the seminary professors was just so shocked, and he reminded me. He said, "Well, we don't understand you Baptists from America." And I said, "Oh, why is that?" "Well, you're always going to come here and do well for Eastern Europe, it seems. You come over on these little mission trips and so forth. But what you do when you get here, the first thing you do is you contact the police. And you go around in police cars. And you know, you have escorts when you have big, I'm talking obviously big missions and projects. We don't understand that. Why would the church have anything to do with the police? Because if anything is obviously opposed to the church and Christians, it's the police. And you guys trust them somehow. And it really took me, you know, a bit of, I mean, I thought about that many, many times. Why do we confide in the police? And his point is well taken, folks. Just because there's an anomaly in history called America, where police have been relatively benign, doesn't negate the fact that for centuries, for all of recorded history, the state and its police forces have been what harms Christians. I mean, who was it that flogged Jesus Christ, who drug him all the way to Golgotha and killed him? It wasn't the Jews, people. It was the Roman military, the police of the day. The police have not been our friends, typically. I'm not saying this isn't a criticism of American police officers, folks. It's a reality check for us to look at who our enemy has been. Whether in America or otherwise, the state has not been a friend of the church. Who is our primary allegiance to, people? It is to Jesus Christ and to his people, his church. That's it. That's our primary allegiance. Everything else is a vastly distant second. It doesn't matter whether people come from Mexico, even if they're illegal immigrants over the border. If they're Christians, you have a special allegiance to them that you don't have to anyone else. If there are people that are in other countries being persecuted by states, like in China, or in Rhodesia, or in Zimbabwe, or the Sudan, or wherever they may be, your primary allegiance is to them, not to the American bombers, or to the American CIA, or to the American Olympic team. Folks, you need to get a grip on this. You live in a world that God cares about in its entirety, not just the United States. You need to get a grip on the fact that God doesn't only speak English. You need to get a grip on the fact that that the Lord actually has his eye on all peoples everywhere at all times. Now, I know in theory, if you're a Christian, you believe what I just said. But in putting it into practice, how do you actually live? Where are your true emotional sentiments tied to? Is it truly to just the Church of God and Jesus, or is it really to to other Americans, for instance, or American allies? Well, think about that a little bit. Ponder that today, and I think it'll be life changing for you if you can get out of the indoctrination which you've succumbed to. All of us did through public school education, at any rate, even through some Christian schools. You know, some of the literature I've seen from Bob Jones is not very impressive. And not just picking on Bob Jones. I'm talking about homeschool materials and Christian school materials from, you know, other schools we've seen, too. I think Pensacola, you know, the Becca Book program. It is fairly indoctrinating, that stuff. It's got the same kind of pent on Americanism that other secular school books do. And it's sad. I'm just glad my kids had an opportunity to be raised for a little while in a foreign country and get a different perspective. It's hard for us to imagine the United States attacking other people because we've lived around other people. We know that they just are, you know, they're people like you and I. They try to get out there and work hard and get ahead in life, and sure, they suffer under oppressive states and regimes and regulations. It's awful what they have to go through, probably worse than what we have here. But to go in and just kill those people as if they're dogs or something is wickedness. Not in favor of war. I just had a great conversation yesterday, a good breakfast eating with my dear brother and friend, Pastor Paul Dean, and we spent a lot of time discussing the evils of war and how, yes, we believe in self-defense. We love guns and gun rights, and we're thankful for the Second Amendment and those things, but we put it in perspective. Those kinds of rights are there to protect us as the ultimate check against the oppressive state. They're there to give us the ultimate check against predators who would want to kill us and harm us. That's why we have those things. It's not to be aggressors ourselves. We pursue peace, paradoxically, by repulsing and keeping back those who would like to want to destroy peace, whether they be communists, socialists, secular humanists, anybody else who aggresses us. We use weaponry as a matter of defense, but when it comes to creating war, to loving war, to becoming bloodthirsty, and like you're playing on a team or a big video game, and let's send our guys over there and blast some people or kick some behind and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're talking about taking people who are struggling to survive and destroying their lives with an American state military. This is not a Christian worldview, people. This is not something we should desire. It's not something a good thing in the world. It's not what Jesus came to bring to the earth. I'm not a pacifist. I'm not telling you that we need to not fight. I'm telling you the opposite. We need to fight against the fighters, the aggressors. We do need to. Christians need to take up arms and attack when they are being attacked. And right now they are being attacked and are too wimpy to actually stand up against the evil oppressor, even here in America. But folks, this is what it comes down to. We have a defensive posture as Christians, not an aggressive one or an offensive one. We're not going out to attack other people and destroy their lives just for the sake of pulling off whatever some benefits to politicians or their friends. This is an evil that Christians need to oppose by the Christian worldview. And I appreciate the fact that so many people who are libertarians and Constitution Party also appreciate this. They're not warmongers, even though they're willing to defend themselves and their countries. They're not out there to actually destroy other people's lives. They're just like you folks. They may have slightly different color skin. They may speak a different language. So what? They're not dogs that you just go and kill. You don't even kill dogs. Anyway. Okay, well, that's been a short and sweet commentary there, I hope, for some of you listeners, especially if you're new to the program up in Spartanburg or elsewhere. That's kind of some of the topics we get to, the deep thinking talks we have here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn. Well, we've got 3 minutes till the next break. I might take a quick read at, let's go catch a few news stories here and maybe do an announcement. The Worldviews Project has published a book from Dr. Stephen Yates called Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. The book's $20.99, and if you send your order to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Stephen Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. If you're a member of the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, you can discount that book price by $2 to $18.99. Just let them know when you place your order. The cost of the book also carries with it a $2.50 shipping and handling charge. So if you're interested in the book, I hope you will be. Pick up a copy by mailing off a check to the Worldviews Project and make the check payable to the Worldviews Project. Care of Dr. Stephen Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. And we also want to remind you that Rip and Richie's show is coming on next week. The Sacred Cow Slaughterhouse will be back most likely every other weekday morning, starting at about 9 o'clock, actually, instead of the afternoon. And I hope you'll tune in. That show is not going to be on this week, as Richie is out of town. Okay, well, what else have we got going on here for just a quick announcement? Republican congressman slams Bush on militarized police state preparation. And this says Ron Paul says indictment story is far more damaging than media is portraying. Avian flu, martial law provisions aimed at gun confiscation. Paul, Joseph Watson, and Alex Jones purported. Congressman Ron Paul has accused the Bush administration of attempting to set in motion a militarized police state in America by enacting gun confiscation martial law provisions in the event of an avian flu pandemic. Paul also slammed as delusional and dangerous plans to invade Iran, Syria, North Korea, and China. Ron Paul represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. He also serves on the House of Representatives Financial Services Committee in the International Relations Committee. Anyway, yeah, we appreciate Ron Paul slamming Bush for that, because he needs to be slammed. That's a terrible thing. Martial law, losing our gun rights, and are you prepared to pull the trigger when they come and take them from you, folks? You're going to lay down and just say, well, I'm just not going to do what the founders did. We'll just go into tyranny and slavery. Think about it. Hide your guns. Get some plan of action into effect before, so you know what you're going to do. Think about it. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us this morning. Very interesting first hour, half hour of the show. If you didn't hear it, get the recording after it goes up, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. This is October 26, 2000. And 5, in case you're listening to the recorded show. Some of you are still on your way out to work, so we want to make sure you have a chance to know about the cool weather that's come our way.
Right now in Greenville-Spartanburg, it's 46 degrees. Downtown Greenville, 42 degrees. Anderson, 34 degrees, believe it or not. Today, mostly sunny. Highs in the lower 60s. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And there's a frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. To Thursday morning. And here's a quote from Ronald Reagan. Politics is supposed to be the second oldest profession. I have come to realize that it bears a very close resemblance to the first.
Okay, are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. And would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find there are regular people like you concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Malden Road between the Old Stadium and Lawrence Road. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us in Greenville for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. In Spartanburg, the Liberty of Plenty meeting will be held at the world-famous Beacon Restaurant, and that will occur on the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. there at the Beacon Drive-In. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Well, here are a couple other stories somewhat related to what we did earlier. A True Conservative Case for Exiting Iraq. This is published on October 23rd by John Nichols. A True Conservative Case for Exiting Iraq. George Bush, who once criticized Ronald Reagan's approach to terrorism, is now making a desperate grab for the former president's coattails. In August, Bush said that because of Reagan's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Lebanon after 1983 bombing of Maine Barracks, Beirut killed 241 Americans, terrorists concluded that free societies lack the courage and character to defend themselves against a determined enemy. But 2 months later, with poll ratings dropping to levels Reagan never saw, and with public support for the Iraq occupation collapsing, Bush traveled to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum, where he declared with a straight face that we are answering history's call in confidence and a comprehensive strategy. Returning again and again to stay his course theme, Bush announced that the key to victory lay in our resolve to stay in the fight till the fight was won. Representative Ron Paul, a maverick Republican from Texas, he's really a libertarian, of course, masquerading as a Republican, who has long been critical of Bush's misguided approach to fighting terrorism, invoked Reagan's legacy as part of a call for withdrawal. And it should be, and he gives a long documentary of this and why we should pull out of Iraq. And, of course, Ron Paul is right. Bush is wrong. There's no surprise there. Now, here's an example of something we talked about earlier in the show today about the Christian worldview with respect to other nations and nationalism and war and things like that. Well, here is this guy, Fred, what's the guy's name again? Fred Phelps, pastor. Somebody sent me this article. It says, Inside the Church of Hate. Inside the Church of Hate, about Pastor Fred Phelps. This guy's a Christian, but we don't believe here that he fully has the Christian worldview comprehended. And here's what he has, some of the things that are going on with him. The Sky Report has recently filmed one of America's most controversial Christian ministers praising the London bombings. Fred Phelps says that the terrorist outrages and natural disasters as Hurricane Rita are examples of God's wrath against countries such as America and Britain for tolerating homosexuals and homosexuality. Fred Phelps, who set up the controversial Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas, told our undercover reporter about the attacks, which killed 52 people. Oh, I'm so thankful that it happened. My only regret is that it didn't kill about a million of them. England deserves that kind of punishment, as does this country, America. The church, which has 150 followers, recently started picketing funerals, including those of American soldiers killed in Iraq, waving banners such as "Thank You, God, 9/11, God hates fags, and AIDS cures fags." You know, folks, this is bad stuff. Okay, this is imbecility at its worst. Jesus Christ can save fags, folks. He can save homosexuals. And indeed, he may be judging people when he allows terrorism or natural disasters to come his way, to come into country. But the problem is that Fred Phelps does not see, there is no such thing as a national sin or national repentance. And God does not punish people inside of a political set of political boundaries because of the sins of certain peoples there. God doesn't do that. Men might, but that's a man-made structure. You see, the only natural understanding of nation from a biblical point of view is to look at nation as an enlargement of a tribe, which is the enlargement of a people, which is the enlargement of a clan, which is the enlargement of a family. That is what a nation is. It's an ethnic aggregate. It has nothing to do with our use of the word nation in the vernacular. It's somehow the political boundaries set forth, such as America or Britain is, with all the people that are contained in it. No, America is full of a lot of different nations, and when the Bible talks about judging a nation or righteousness exalting a nation, it's not talking about exalting those who happen to be found in a particular political boundary that was set arbitrarily and capriciously by men in any particular century. No, that's a man-made understanding of nation, and this Fred Phelps guy is totally off just at his basis and his presupposition by saying that God is judging people based on their national allegiance or their national boundary, the political boundaries which are the confines in which they find themselves. That's his number one flaw. Second flaw is he's hoping for the deaths and condemnation and killings or literal carnage of a million people. I mean, come on, if that's truly what he said, and it doesn't surprise me, because I've read a little bit of this guy before, then he is dead wrong. This is not the Christian worldview. We don't hope for the slaughter of the evil, even. We hope for their repentance and their change. And I hope you can see that as well, people. As Christians, we are not in favor of natural disasters or anything else wiping people out. We do know that people suffer for their sins, but it's not in a national sense that's commonly used today. There could be God judging the nation as God judging a family group or people group, an ethnic aggregate. That occurred in the Old Testament, could happen today, I suppose. Although we have to remember that the church now is a different kind of nation. The Apostle Peter tells us that we who are Christians are called out of every nation, kindred, and tribe. We are a holy nation. Excuse me, Apostle John said the former, Apostle Peter the latter. We are a holy nation of people, you know, God's chosen generation. And so now the church is comprised of all sorts of different nations. We need to make sure that we understand that and not get confused by the popular use of the word nation as if it refers to the political boundaries wherein we all are confined. Okay, so let's move on from that. We need to beware and be careful not to fall prey to false ideology and false doctrine, especially of people making mistakes like Fred Phelps. Here, Harriet Myers, that's right, Harriet Myers in the news, the Conservative Caucus newsletter says Harriet Myers is a great liberal, a great society liberal. And it says, because of blind bipartisan loyalty, Ms. Myers would probably be confirmed if her nomination remains under consideration. That's why I'm urging you to join me in calling for President Bush to withdraw the nomination of Harriet Myers. You can help by sending that message to the White House by email. And he says, thanks for your consideration, Howard Phillips, the Conservative Caucus. Howard Phillips is a good guy. He's, essentially, you're talking about Constitution Party people, and they're opposed to Harriet Myers' nomination. No surprise. I mean, so are we, because we don't trust her either, any of us who are libertarians. But we don't trust much of any of them, frankly. Somebody who wears a conservative badge might just be as bad as anyone else out there. Internet phone wiretap rule is being challenged. A new federal regulation making it easier for law enforcement to tap internet phone calls is being challenged in court. Privacy and technology groups have asked the Federal Appeals Court in Washington on Tuesday to overturn the Federal Communications Commission rule that expands wiretapping to uncover internet calls or voice over internet protocol. They want systems designed so it would be easy to do that, the FBI does. The whole process of innovation on the Internet would be seriously damaged, said John Morris, staff counsel of the Center for Democracy and Technology. The rule approved by the FCC in August requires that providers of Internet phone calls and broadband services ensure their equipment can allow police wiretaps. The cost of doing it is substantial. The government, of course, doesn't really care about cost now, does it? So the rule applies to VoIP providers such as Vonage, of course, and VoicePulse and Champion and others that we are familiar with. So now the government's trying to make sure they can tap your internet calls if you've got a VoIP. VoIP's a good idea, by the way, just in fact, if it could keep you away from it, the internet tap from the state. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. It's time for a break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We like to read Vox Dei, and although you know, once in a while you find something you question a little bit, Vox Dei is a tremendous young man, a novelist and Christian libertarian, member of the Southern Baptist Church, Mensa, and so forth. Just a tremendous young mind, and we appreciate his work. And on WorldNet Daily, he recently had a little article called "Flirting with Fascism," and here's what it says. One of the great imponderables, and the question of which is more ironic, the American left's feverish denial of its ideological kinship with the historic fascist and national socialist parties, or the Republican Party's continual leftward drift toward what both Benito Mussolini and Tony Blair described as the third way between capitalism and socialism. Since the term fascism is so often misunderstood, thanks to 5 decades of European academics desperately trying to scrub the history books clean, let us put it aside for the nonce. Perhaps a more useful term capable of accommodating honest individuals on both sides of the political spectrum is corporatism, which refers to political ideology which gives primacy to the marriage of state and big business. Even this term is imperfect, as it is not uncommon to confuse corporatism for capitalism, but this can hardly be the case in the modern concept of the corporation as an artificial person with legal standing only dates back to 1886, a scant 2 years before Karl Marx was scientifically predicting capitalism's certain demise. And while the marriage of corporation and state is indubitably more civilized and less lethally inclined than socialism, after all, someone has to buy those products that generate the profits that are lifeblood to the corporation, it is nevertheless inimical to human liberty. There are 4 obvious dangers of the corporatist third way. Corporations have no loyalties. Secondly, corporatism represents a constant and growing government interference with a capitalist operation of the free market, usually at the behest of the established players. Third, corporations perpetuate the continuation of government power without limitation because they can so easily become direct extensions of it should the government choose to acquire them. And fourth, because they are artificial persons, they have no direct stake in the individual freedom, and individual freedom have no inherent reason to oppose intrusions upon it. For example, the Electronic Freedom Foundation has discovered that the Brother Canon Dell, Epson, Hewlett-Packard, Konica, Kyocera, Lanier, Lexmark, Ryko, Savin, and Xerox corporations all to appear have quietly added secret codes to the output of color printers in order to facilitate the federal government's ability to track printed material. This is normally conceived to interfere with monetary counterfeiting operations, but could easily be used for a whole host of liberty-reducing actions. Now, there is nothing illegal about government requesting such codes, nor there's anything inherently wrong with corporations acceding to the government's request, but by the same token, consumers have the right to know what they are buying, so that if they would refer to instead buy a printer that allows them to print an anonymous document, they have the ability to do so. This is the only one of many ways which corporatism sacrifices the interests of individuals for the benefit of both corporations and the government. While the third way may look somewhat reasonable to both liberals and conservatives, actually in the interests of no one but the professional bureaucratic class that runs both sides of the corporativist equations. Liberals who oppose big government need to recognize it is big government which enables and protects the very big business policies that they despise, and conservatives who prioritize economic growth must likewise understand that big business does not provide it, but instead are feeding a growing fatter upon small businesses that actually provide the impetus for such growth. Despite themselves, the wild-eyed liberal lunatics are not entirely incorrect. The Bush administration does harbor an identifiably fascist ideological strain, but the salient fact that liberals fail to recognize that the Democratic Party happens to share it, as a Rodham administration in 2008 will not represent an ideological change from the present domestic regime, but rather a continuation of the third way openly declared by President Clinton in 1992. Good commentary. We appreciate Vox Day in pointing out just how fascist America has become. Just how fascist it's become. Yes, that's the word I'm using. That's what Vox Day is using. Fascist. Because that's what it's all about. That's what it is. All right, well, here is something from Albert J. Nock on Herbert Spencer. We like Albert J. Nock. He co-author of the famous book Our Enemy, the State, and redefines, makes a difference and distinction between governments, civil governments, and states. There's an article about that on policyofliberty.net, also an audio file on tyrannyresponse.net, in case you care to see it. Here it is. Well, before we do that, we have a phone call coming in. We want to take a call here. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, good morning. This is Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. Good morning. Glad to hear you call.
Well, thank you. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah. What's happening?
Not so much today. Another work day.
Yeah.
Out running an errand at the moment.
Good. We'll keep warm. It's cold outside.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Well, we've had a very interesting lineup of show discussions today. I hope you've been able to tune in for the whole show.
Not the whole show, it's part.
Okay. Good. Well, what's your question? What's on your mind?
Well, interested to see what you think about this news article where Jim DeMint is proposing the scrapping of the income tax code.
Yeah, we read that a little bit earlier. I want to see more developments on it, Chuck. When I read that earlier on the show, it didn't give me enough details on what he actually wants to do to replace it. I'll be glad to see him scrap the income tax code, of course. But if he's going to just install a value-added tax, that's very egregious. That's, although better, I would have to say, it's not going to be very pleasant, I would think. In Chile, they have very little income tax, and they have a large value-added tax, 18%, I believe it is, and that's on every level of production, and it does make things a lot more expensive.
Yeah, I think the typical problem is they like to move the shell around. It's a shell game. You say, well, I'm not going to tax this, but I'll tax that, and you're not addressing the core problem that's spending so much money.
Correct. That's right. Well, anyway, so as far as
I'm
concerned,
the other thing that happens is as you get a tax, in the case of the income tax where it's enforced, it's overzealously enforced. And over time, people learn how to get around that, and so they move it to a new tax where they can fool you again.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking too may happen here. The jury's still out on it. We're just interested in following what actually transpires after he and Lindsey Graham present their idea today at Congress. And we'll just wait and see. Maybe it'll be a good show topic for tomorrow.
It could be. I'm not crazy about the VAT. It's even more of a hidden tax got now.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It is a problem. The value added tax is not a good tax either. But like you say, it would alleviate a lot of slavery from the income tax that so many people feel. And so for that, you know, maybe worth it just alone, that alone, to get rid of it. Anyway, Jim, yeah, Jim DeMint.
Good point about it. I agree. And hopefully it would be less.
Right. Okay, good. Well, I appreciate the call, Chuck. We're glad to think about those things. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. Enjoy talking to you. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, let's go back to what we were reading about Albert J. Nock and his view on Spencer. Albert J. Nock, 1870 to 1945, was the great American essayist whose anti-statism had a huge impact on the development of American libertarian theory. This is an introduction to Spencer's forgotten 1844 classic, The Man Versus the State. In 1851, Herbert Spencer published a treatise called Social Statics, or The Conditions Essential to Happiness Specified. Among other specifications, this work has established and made clear the fundamental principle that society should be organized on the basis of voluntary cooperation, not on the basis of compulsory cooperation or under the threat of it. In a word, it established the principle of individualism as against statism, against the principle underlying all the collectivist doctrines which are everywhere dominant at the present time. It contemplated the reduction of state power over the individual to an absolute minimum and the raising of social power to its maximum, as against the principle of statism, which contemplates the precise opposite. Spencer maintained that the state's interventions upon the individual should be confined to punishing those crimes against person or property which are recognized as such by what the Scots philosophers called the common sense of all mankind, enforcing the obligations of contract and making justice costless and easily accessible. Beyond this, the state should not go. It should put no further coercive restraint upon the individual. All the state can do for the best interests of society, all it can do for promoting a permanent and stable well-being of society, is by way of those purely negative interventions. Let it go beyond them and attempt the promotion of society's well-being by positive coercive interventions upon the citizen, and whatever apparent and temporary social good may be affected will be greatly at the cost of real and permanent social good. Spencer's work of 1851 is long out of print and out of currency. A copy of it is extremely hard to find. It should be republished, for it is the philosophy of idealism that the work of the German idealist philosophers of the doctrine of, is to the doctrine of statism. What Das Kapital is to statist economic theory, or what Pauline epistles are to the theology of Protestantism. It had no effect, or very little, on checking the riotous progress of statism in England, still less in saying that the calamitous consequences of that progress. From 1851 down to his death at the end of the first of the century, Spencer wrote on occasional essays, partly as running comment on the acceleration of statism's progress, partly on his exposition by force of his illustration and example, and partly by remarkably accurate prophecy of what has come to pass as in a consequence of the wholesale substitution of the principle of compulsory cooperation, the statist principle, for the individualist principle of voluntary cooperation. He reissued four of these essays in 1884 under the title The Man Versus the State, and these four essays, together with two others, called Over Legislation and Freedom from Bondage, are now reprinted here under the same general title. And we might read some more about these in a minute. We're coming up to a break here, but the first essay is called New Toryism, and it just shows the contrast names between early liberalism and those of modern liberalism. And that alone might be worth talking about. But I think the whole point is that Spencer and Nock point out a great difference between statism, that is, the worship of the state, the reliance of the state, the trust in the state to bring about social cooperation, versus the social cooperation that comes about from voluntary exchange in a market economy, and why it's better to rely on free enterprise and free exchange of individuals than the statist prescription. So we may come back and revisit some of this. It's an excellent piece that Nock writes, and we do appreciate that Episcopalian minister of early in the 20th century did such a great job. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll come back from a break in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-9904. 844-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today. Interesting show. Lots of deep thinking going on. Hope it hasn't been too scary for you to think deeply. But we were glad you had an opportunity to tune in today. It's been a good opportunity to think about things from a Christian perspective that are of eternal significance. It is the 26th day of October 2005, and let's have a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 46 degrees, downtown 42 degrees, Anderson 34 degrees. Today, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 60s, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And there is a frost advisory in effect from midnight tonight to 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And here is a quote from Winston Churchill. Men occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off as if nothing happened.
Yes, indeed. And we want to remind you about the TyrannyResponse.net website, TyrannyResponse.com website. There are several meetings going around in the upstate, and you find out about them by the clicking on the events tab on that website. You scroll down to the bottom of the page under the events tab, you'll find a calendar, and that calendar shows that tonight there is a Greenville County Libertarian Party meeting. That's the one that meets in at the downtown area at the Cafe Underground, 8 o'clock. Hope you can attend it this evening. There's also, obviously many of us have church meetings tonight, but at any rate, if you are free to attend it, that's there. Tomorrow night, the Greenville County Taxpayers Meeting will be occurring in downtown Greenville Library at 7 p.m. At the same time, the Constitution Party will be having its meeting at the South Point Baptist Church in Pelzer, South Carolina. So tune in to tyrannyresponse.com and find out that great information. Also want to give a quick plug for our friends at the Times Examiner. Remember, it is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. If you're tired of reading liberal columnists, get a copy of the Times Examiner. You can get it sent to you for only $25 a month or a year, and it'll come every month to you, $27 if you live out of state. Call 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. You can also place an ad in the Times Examiner. If you want to do so, call David and ask for him by name at 864-859-6817. That's 864-859-6817 and ask for David. At the bottom of the related media tab on tyrannyresponse.com, there is the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition, which is a petition to help save your private property and to tell the the legislators in the state of South Carolina that we believe that natural that rights are natural. They don't come from government. That is the fundamental rights to life, liberty, and property. Join the 300 people or so who have signed the petition by going to the tyrannyresponse.com website, scrolling down to the related media tab, and under the bottom you'll find at the bottom you'll find the South Carolina fundamental rights petition. Hope you can participate and sign that today. Just take you 30 seconds. It's worth doing. Well, I wanted to get back for a minute to a couple things on this knock thing. Before I do, I just want to let you know just a couple of quick news stories. So we'll be coming back to the knock on Spencer business. We stopped reading sort of short in the middle, I guess, really, of his review, and part of it was worth reading. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But Fox News reports today that conservative groups is to broadcast a TV ad opposing Myers. A conservative group opposing Harriet Myers brought a $250,000 of television and radio time Tuesday to broadcast an advertising nationwide calling for President Bush to withdraw his nominee from the Supreme Court. The White House said it was standing behind Myers, no doubt. The ad by the Americans for Better Justice is the first anti-Myers television spot as evidence of the battle the White House is having over her denomination. Of course, we also read earlier that Howard Phillips and the True Conservative Caucus are also opposing it. And we would oppose it. We would oppose most anybody promoted by somebody like George W. Bush, who has shown himself to be a true liberal, neocon of the first order, and not even a Christian. As far as we can tell, reading his credentials yesterday, that was very indicting. If we read anything about his Christian credentials, it's very, very questionable, to say the least. And we also can tell by his actions that they're very questionable. Ron Paul worries that the estate tax will never be replaced. He says just 2 years ago, or in an article by Ron Paul, he says just 2 years ago, Congress was poised to eliminate the hated estate tax permanently. However, several U.S. senators are using their own wasteful spending habits to justify retaining the tax. The estate tax, more accurately known as the death tax because it's levied when a taxpayer dies, confiscates anywhere from 37% to 55% of an individual's assets. Ultimately, the argument against the death tax is a moral one. People should not be punished for working hard, saving, and building wealth. Appreciate Ron Paul pointing that out to us this morning. Well, okay, here is the rest of Knock on Spencer. In the first essay, says Albert J. Knock, the new Toryism is of primary importance just now because it shows the contrast between the aims and methods of early liberalism and those of modern liberalism. In these days, we hear a great deal about liberalism, liberal principles and policies, in the conduct of our public life. All sorts of conditions of men put themselves forward on the public stage as liberals. They call those who oppose them Tories and get credit with the public thereby. In the public mind, liberalism is a term of honor, while Toryism, especially economic Toryism, is the term of reproach. Needless to say, these terms are never examined. The self-styled liberal is taken popularly at face value of his pretensions, of his pretensions and policies, which are put forth as liberals, as liberal, are accepted as the same in the same unreflecting way. This being so, it is useful to see what the historic sense of the term is and how to see how far the aims and methods of latter-day liberalism can be brought into the correspondence with it, and how far, therefore, the latter-day liberal is entitled to bear that name. Spencer shows that early liberal was consistently for cutting down the state's coercive power over the citizens. That would be like, the early liberal would be like Thomas Jefferson, for instance, wherever that was possible. He was for reducing to a minimum the number of points to which the state might make coercive interventions upon the individual. He was for steadily enlarging the margin of existence the citizen might pursue and regulate his own activities as he saw fit, free of state control or state supervision. Liberal policies and measures, as originally conceived, were such as reflected these aims. The Tory, on the other hand, was opposed to these aims, and his policies reflected his opposition. In general terms, the liberal was consistently inclined towards the individualist philosophy of society, while the Tory was consistently inclined towards the statist philosophy. Spencer shows, moreover, that as a matter of practical policy, the early liberal proceeded towards the realization of his aims by the methods of repeal. He was not for making new laws, but for repealing old ones. It is most important to remember this. Wherever the liberal saw a law which enhanced the state's coercive power over the citizen, he was for repealing it and leaving it in its place blank. There were many such laws in the British statute books, and when liberalism came into power, it repealed an immense grist of them. Spencer must be left to describe his own words, as he does in the course of his essay, how in the latter half of the last century, that means the 18th century, or the 19th century, British liberalism went over bodily to the philosophy of statism, and abjuring the political method of repealing existing coercive measures, proceeded to outdo the Tories in constructing new coercive measures of ever-increasing particularity. This piece of British political history has a great value for American readers because it enables them to see how closely American liberalism has followed in the same course. It enables them to interpret correctly the significance of liberalism's influence on the direction of our public life in the last half century, and to perceive just what it is which that influence has led, just what the consequences are, what that influence has tended to bring about, and just what are the further consequences which may be expected to ensue. For example, statism postulates the doctrine that the citizen has no rights which the state is bound to respect. The only rights he has are those which the state grants him, and which the state may attenuate or revoke at his own pleasure. This doctrine is fundamental. Without its support, all the various nominal modes and forms of statism which we see in the large in Europe and America, such as are called socialism, communism, Nazism, fascism, etc., would collapse all at once. The individualism which was professed by the early liberals maintained the contrary. It maintained the citizen has rights which are inviolable by the state or by any other agency. This was fundamental doctrine. Without its support, obviously, every formulation of individualism becomes so much waste paper. Moreover, early liberalism accepted as not as fundamental but also as axiomatic, self-evident. We may remember, for example, that our great charter, the Declaration of Independence, takes as its foundation the self-evident truth of this doctrine, asserting that man, in virtue of his birth, is endowed with certain rights which are inalienable, and asserting further that it is to secure these rights that governments are established and instituted among men. Political literature will nowhere furnish or a more explicit disavowal of the statist philosophy than is to be found in the primary postulate of the Declaration. But now, in which the direction that the latter-day American liberalism tended, it has tended towards the expanding regime of voluntary cooperation or enforced cooperation. Have its efforts directed consistently toward repealing existent measures of state coercion or toward the devising and promotion of new ones? Has it tended steadily to enlarge or reduce the margin of existence within which the individual may act as he pleases? Has it contemplated the state intervention upon the citizen at an ever-increasing number of points, or at an ever-decreasing number? In short, has it consistently exhibited the philosophy of individualism, or the philosophy of statism? There can be but one answer, and the facts supporting it are so notorious that multiplying examples would be a waste of space. To take but a single one of them from among the most conspicuous, liberals worked hard and successfully to inject the principle of absolutism into the Constitution by means of the Income Tax Amendment. Under that amendment, it is competent for Congress not only to confiscate the citizen's last penny, but also to levy punitive taxation, discriminatory taxation, taxation for the equalization of wealth, or for any other purpose it sees fit to promote. Hardly could a single measure be devised which would do more to clear the way for a purely statist regime than this which puts so formidable a mechanism into the hands of the state and gives the state carte blanche for its employment against the citizen. Again, the present administration is made up of self-styled liberals, and in its course has been continuous triumph, a triumphal advance of statism. In preface to these essays written in 1884, Spencer has a paragraph which sums up with remarkable completeness the political history of the United States during the last 6 years. Dictatorial measures rapidly multiplied have tended continually to narrow the liberties of individuals and have done this in a double way. Regulations have been made in a yearly growing numbers, restraining the citizen, and directions where actions were previously unchecked, and compelling actions which previously he might perform or not as he liked. And at the same time, the heavier public burdens, chiefly local, have further restricted his freedom by lessening that portion of his earnings which he can spend as he pleases, and augmenting the portion taken from him to be spent as public agents please. Thus closely has the course of American statism from 1932 to 1939 followed the course of British statism from 1860 to 1884. Considering their professions of liberalisms, it would be quite appropriate and by no means inurbane to ask Mr. Roosevelt and his entourage whether they believe that the citizen has any rights which the state is bound to respect. Would they be willing ex animo, that is, and not for the electioneering purposes, to subscribe to the fundamental rights doctrine of the Declaration? One would be unfeignedly surprised if they were, yet such an affirmation would go some way to clarify the distinction, and if the actuality be, there actually be any, between the totalitarian Stalinism of Central or certain European countries and the democratic statism of Great Britain, France, and the United States. It is commonly taken for granted that there is such a distinction, but those who assume this do not trouble themselves to show wherein the distinction consists, and the disinterested observer in the fact of existence is, to say the least, not obvious. Well, we really appreciate Knox pointing out this stuff to us this morning. It's a great great piece of information that he's given us. Folks, we need to be careful. Statism's right under our nose here in America, and we have an egregious, encroaching state that takes away our rights and claims that we do not have them and hold them fundamentally, and that's a sham. We need to stand by the Declaration. If you're a Christian, think about it. Stand up for the truths and principles of the Declaration of the Founders and reject those of the statist, whether it be in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview, the final segment for October 26, 2005. And I want to remind you folks that we need volunteers, we need financial support. Best if you can help either way, go to tyrannyresponse.com. You'll find the address on the front page for sending your check. In addition to that, under the Volunteers tab, under the Contacts tab, volunteers who want to help out to the Tyranny Response Network with either radio equipment or with networking issues with computers, as well as to be a substitute producer for the Christian Worldview show. That's going to be very important in the next month or so. We really need somebody quickly to become trained to do that. Go ahead and give us send an email. Click one of the tabs there and send us an email so we can hear from you. Even if you can only put in a couple hours a month, it would be a great deal of help for this great effort at the Tyranny Response Network. If you also would like to call and you don't want to use the internet service, give Chuck a call at 271 6761 and leave him a message. He'll get back to you and appreciate your help. Well, here there's freemarketnews.com, which also publishes my writings. Appreciate their work. This is essentially Harry Brown's website. Bush's bastardized conservatism. A rebellion appears to be brewing among conservatives. Not unpredictably, Bush has hit them where it hurts, the Supreme Court, and thankfully, this has been the final straw. That's interesting enough. Interesting enough, yes, we do believe that Bush is causing himself all sorts of grief here, and good thing. Spontaneous combustion. Recall he famously declared that when someone hurts, government has to move. Libertarians spontaneously burst into flames when they say things like that, says columnist Jonah Goldberg. The bile accumulating in the right towards the White House has reached China syndrome proportions and is starting to melt through the floor. Suddenly, conservatives are starting to question whether George W. Bush is even one of them at all. He's comfortable with a conservative welfare state, hence the expansion of Medicare. Indeed, well, good thing that people are starting to wake up and see that. The rumble of revolt. Americans who are getting increasingly angry at out-of-control government spending, waste, fraud, and abuse. It's the sound of a growing disillusionment and frustration of the American people. It's a sense of increasing disgust about blatant overspending and our ability to make tough choices about budgets, spend each and every day, our inability to make priorities a number one priority rather than spending our children and grandchildren's future. That's Senator Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma. The rumble is a frustration that's getting louder. That's what I'm hearing. People here to tell you that the rumble against spending is getting louder. People are fed up all across the country. Americans are rising up against government overspending. Yes, Bush is in trouble. We hope. Columnist Joseph Sobrin says the Republicans are doing most of the things that once were called liberal. They spend recklessly, ignore constitutional limitations, increase government power, create new federal programs, you name it. Only they now call these liberal sins conservative virtues. Great quote. Gotta like that. I'm going to save that. Maybe I can put that on my website. That might be a good quotation to post up there. So, anyway, yes, people are starting to wake up, and we're glad that they're starting to wake up a little bit. Even conservatives, even they're not always getting it right on the money, they're getting it partly right, and that's good. Lincoln and federal violations of the Constitution. Here's something off of Gray Echoes on Lincoln and federal violations of the Constitution. Like most of you, I'm tired of hearing about Lincoln and the Union's great defense of the Constitution for all Americans. From Newt Gingrich to Hillary Clinton, every politician appears to bow to the Lincolnian concept of government. The following is a list of violations of the Constitution by Lincoln and his Reconstruction Republicans. Article 1, Section 3, Clause 1, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote. Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1, the times, places, and manners holding the elections of senators and representatives shall be prescribed by each state by the legislature thereof, but Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the places of choosing senators. Violation. The first Reconstruction Act of 1867 refused to let set Southern senators from state that rejected the 14th Amendment. They appointed their own to replace them, black and Republican. Article 4, Section 1, Clause 3, no person held to the service or labor in one state under the laws thereof escaping into another shall, in the consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from such service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Violation, the various policies dealing with contraband. Article 4, Section 3, Clause 1, new states may be admitted to the Congress by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected without the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of those states concerned, as well as of the Congress. Violation, the formation of West Virginia from Virginia. Article 4, Section 4 says the United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion on the application of the legislature or the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. The violation is the First and Second Reconstruction Acts and the replacement of senators and congressmen, congressional contingents from 12 of the 13 states elected by the manner prescribed by the U.S. Constitution. Article 5, the Congress, wherever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution. And the violation is the First and Second Reconstruction Acts and the replacement of senators and congressional contingents from 12 or 13 Confederate states elected in the form in the manner prescribed by the Constitution. Amendment 1, abridging the freedom of speech. The violation is the arrest of dissenting newspaper editors in the North and the prevention of the Maryland legislature to convene in 1861. Amendment 3, no soldier shall be in time of peace quarantined in any house, etc. The violation is, since it was never prescribed by law, the seizure of homes for hospitals, officers' quarters in southern states. Post-war pre-construction period was another time of violation. Example, the Confederate White House was used for a military headquarters. Okay, well, at any rate, he goes on and talks about every other one of these amendments here and how the Reconstruction government of Lincoln violated the Constitution. It wasn't just or Lincoln and Grant, I should say. It wasn't just Lincoln that began the violations and Grant that continued. It's gone on ever since. But Lincoln was the first one to really destroy the concepts of liberty that were held so dearly by the Founding Fathers. And so we appreciate people sending in this information. Well, here is security and terrorism. Congress wants a new Able Danger probe on a witch hunt defense by officials against the September 11th intelligence whistleblower. Republican Kurt Weldon from Pennsylvania told United Press International that officials at the Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, has conducted a deliberate campaign of character assassination against a whistleblower, retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. Schaefer has said that a highly classified Pentagon data mining project he worked on, codenamed Able Danger, identified the ringleaders of the September 11th terrorist attacks as linked to al-Qaeda more than a year before they hijacked four planes and crashed them, killing nearly 3,000 people. Okay, so they identified the people, but they didn't bother to report, you know, let us know that, and the president, whoever, didn't apparently act upon it. Okay. Well, let's see. What else have we got here? Senators vote 90 to 9 to aid terrorists. U.S. Senate supports the right of terrorists to bomb U.S. targets. What's this all about? These are the headlines describe what the U.S. Senate did just days ago. The GOP-controlled Senate added an amendment to the $404 billion military spending bill that would extend despised terrorists and Islamic jihadists the same rights as U.S. citizens enjoy under the Constitution. Well, I'll have to find out some more about that, what that's all about, but for now, we'll leave it be. If somebody wants to call and tell us, we'd be happy to hear about it. All right, we got too many. I'll tell you what, we got so many things to cover, we're not going to possibly get them done in the next 2 minutes. There's some great articles. This one I wanted to get to, Must a Christian Be a Libertarian? Sort of a Catholic article in some ways, but and I think they're using that term Christian a little too broadly, but it would be interesting to read that article, and we'll try to do that in short order. Maybe tomorrow we'll have a chance to do so. Here we have a Courage, Love, and Iodine. On September 29th, 1862, Colonel John B. Gordon held the center of General Lee's army in the Battle of Antietam, or Sharpsburg. The lion sent a ball through the calf of Gordon's right leg, and soon after, another went through the muscles of his thigh. A third pierced his left arm, tearing asunder his tendons and mangling the flesh. A fourth ripped through his shoulder, leaving a wad of clothing embedded in its track. Still, no bones were broken, but while Gordon lingered in the firing line with, he says himself, but little of my usual strength, a fifth ball struck him squarely in the face. Remembering his assurance to General Lee that the Confederate center would be defended against the Federalists, Colonel John B. Gordon, in the oppressive heat near the noon hour, stumbles from one flank of the fighting regiment to the other. With blood flowing from his wounds, he inspires the 6th Alabama to fight on. As he inspects the determined gray line, Colonel Gordon notices a wounded father holding his lifeless son, and also the many devoted Southern soldiers, ensuring that the promise of General Lee would be kept. He has sent a young messenger toward the right flank to remind the men of their duty to General Lee, but the messenger has fallen dead. Colonel Gordon knows the message is to be delivered. He alone must take the risk. Suppressing his pain, he pushes on, knowing he can never abandon his men unless he will be shipped. His will is stripped from him by a bullet. This is shortly to occur when a shot strikes him in the face, rendering him unconscious. Nevertheless, his men still will stand steadfast. Dr. Weatherly of the 6th Alabama Regiment, in charge of the medical arrangements, had the colonel removed to the base hospital, prescribed a tincture of iodine to be painted on the wounds 3 or 4 times a day. The case was uncompromising. Gordon's eyelids were greatly swollen 3 or 4 times a day. The case was unpromising. Gordon's eyelids were greatly swollen. One eye completely closed. The other almost too. His jaw was immovably clenched. And to make matters worse, his eye spirals, erysipelas, I guess it's called, whatever it is, affection of the skin, had left him in his left arm. Anyway, Mrs. Gordon, his wife, who nursed him, her name Fanny, she was then a beautiful girl, 25, put a liberal interpretation on her instructions and painted the wounds not 3 or 4 times a day, but as Gordon himself says, I think about 300 to 400 times a day. Fanny's diligence and devotions were rewarded. Her husband survived, outlived the war, became governor of Georgia, a general and commander-in-chief of the United Confederate Veterans. He died in 1904. And that's your reminiscence for the day. And it's a great way to end the Christian Worldview show for today. We look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we wish you God's blessings.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.